Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to Not Another Mummy Podcast. I'm Alison Perry, and you're listening to episode 37. My guest today is Lucy Sheridan, the world's first and only comparison coach. Lucy works with clients and also speaks about how to aim for a comparison-free life. Now, if you're anything like me, you'll spend a fair amount of time comparing yourself and your family to others. It's not a nice trait to have, but I do think it's something we all do. From how much veg your child is eating compared to that child over there, and how calm and patient that mum is compared to you, to how well a friend is doing in their career compared to you, or even comparing how toned her arms are compared to yours. Although personally, I quite like my bingo wings. It's something that we all do. So in this episode, I chat to Lucy about why we compare ourselves to others, also how to work out what our comparison triggers are and how to deal with those comparison issues. We also chat more generally about how much of ourselves we should put online, and Lucy talks about us all creating a digital tattoo of our lives, and also a little bit about how to be kind to ourselves online. So hopefully you'll get some pearls of wisdom from Lucy as you're listening to this episode. Lucy, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
I'm excited. No, I'm really genuinely excited to have you on the podcast, and I really wanted to have you on. It's kind of interesting because my podcast is all about parenting and motherhood, mm-hmm. and you're the first non-mother I've had on, or non-parent.
Yes.
But the reason I really wanted to have you on was because I feel like what you talk about is relevant to everyone, but it seems super relevant to parents and mothers. And I feel like whenever I hear you talking or read stuff that you've written, it kind of really speaks to me and it really resonates. So I just thought it was really important to have you on and to hear what you've got to say.
Well, I'm delighted. I'll give you all my good stuff.
Do it, please. So, comparison.
Yes.
Why is that something that we do?
Gosh, I think it's something that's always been around. So, for example, I think it even made it into the Bible. You know, you think about, you know, thou shalt not covet thy neighbour's ox or donkey or whatever. And okay, maybe the comparisons don't translate to the modern age. But in terms of, like, being warned against wanting what other people have, it's been around for a long, long time. Why do we compare? Ultimately, we compare because we're not necessarily feeling really grounded or rooted in, like, on our own path. And so we look outside ourselves, and it's really easy to spring outside ourselves and look at what other people are doing, and then make those comparisons, make those judgments, and we just never come off well, really, apart from if maybe we're doing kind of other types of comparison. So I think it's a natural trait that comes up with many of us, the majority of us, when we are feeling a bit disconnected. So sometimes, that's why I think comparison has a scale as well. Sometimes you'll find yourself where you might be a little bit irked by something you see on social media, oh goodness, I wish I'd done that, or they look like they're really doing well over there. And sometimes there might be almost like long-standing rivalries where there's certain types of people, certain types of things that you've compared yourself to all through life. So it's kind of awareness is everything around it, really. But ultimately, when people say, how do we stop comparing? Well, it is the process of getting really, really clearly back connected with yourself and what you want.
Okay.
But unfortunately, there are lots of tips and techniques. I'm sure I'll share some of them today. But it isn't just a switch you turn on and off. It's,
right.
It's a state that we're in.
A process.
And it's almost, I guess, like that state that we find ourselves in, which has kind of, you know, it lingers and lingers around. So, for example, envy is a feeling, isn't it? It's emotion, but it's transient too. I might feel envious now, but I might feel hungry in 20 minutes. Comparison is kind of is more complex than that.
Right.
And that's why, that's why I bang on about it all the time, because I think it is a bit of a taboo as well, which is ironic considering how many of us actually experience it.
But then also envy is a bit of a taboo as well. Like,
yeah.
It feels like, you know, it doesn't feel very natural to admit to see a friend that, oh, I'm feeling really envious of you today.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes you might in jest or in a lighthearted way.
Yeah.
But it does feel like we don't talk about this stuff that much.
No, I think you're right, love. And a big part of that too is it's part of the, like, almost like the ugly parts of our personality, aren't they? And we're not all aquamarine, rainbow, sparkly colours when it comes to our personalities and our traits. We are the dirty, horrible greens and browns as well. And so, yeah, it can feel really funky. But that's why I'm really passionate and will be really, really passionate about kind of saying, don't judge yourself on it. We all feel it. We all go through it. It's, and you know, it's our choice, but then whether we communicate it or not, and if we do communicate it, because you make a really good point there. You could see a friend doing really well. Oh my goodness, you cheeky thing. Like, how did you manage that?
Yeah.
That's great. And although you might be like, oh, there's that pang of I want it too, it does follow through to, well, that's pretty cool actually. Like, if anyone's going to do it, I want it to be her.
Yes.
But then there are, of course, those relationships or those people that trigger our comparison.
So is that more about the state of mind that you're in at that point, or is it about your relationship with that person? So I've got friends, say, for example, like you say, who are doing amazingly well, and I genuinely feel nothing but pleasure in seeing them doing well, and I want them to do even better.
Yeah.
And there is not even one hint of a pang of self-reflection of, why am I not doing that?
Mm-hmm.
Is that more about where I am in that state, you know, at that moment, or is that about my relationship with that person?
Yeah. Oh, that's such a great question. I think it can sometimes be both, because, for example, I felt, if I think about myself, because I kind of joke that I am the case study here, like I'm constantly trying to improve and learn in the hope that I'll get to the high 90% of free of this, you know. But for me, I found that comparison, or that the envy that comes with it too, will happen with mostly people I don't know very well.
Mm.
And what I'm able to, what my comparison mind is able to do is fill in all the gaps.
Yes.
Because I don't know the real story.
Yeah.
And then I'll invariably come off badly and, you know, give myself a stick to beat myself with. So I think comparison is about the state we're in, and also, the relationship we have with that, with someone. Because there'll always be kind of maybe a really good friend that you've maybe, you know, kept on par with here and there. So we, whether it's for good or bad, we measure ourselves a little bit on what they're doing, how they're going, because we can see so many points of parity and similarity between us. But interestingly, I think it's absolutely about the state that you're in and what your comparison wants to hook on to. Because, like I say, you know, when I had a really like weird sticky comparison last year with someone in our industry, and like, he and I have very little in common apart from a few pals, but I just kind of really started to pit myself against him.
Yeah.
Even though I would never talk about this to him. I'd be so embarrassed, because it's like I say, it's just the party personality, like, running wild.
Yeah.
You know, and there I am being the comparison coach and like facing this like really hardcore assignment with him. But yeah, I've looked into that myself, and I think sometimes it can be the day that it happens as well. Because if you're feeling really aligned and you're taking action, or you're just feeling like you're in flow, comparison can't really get in. It's like you put yourself almost in a zorb of protection. But when you are feeling maybe a little bit unsure, or things are feeling slow, or you're not feeling like really committed or focused or passionate, that's when comparison can get in.
Right.
And so if you were feeling like that one day, let's say a friend I don't know, let's say a friend celebrates a great work win. If you're feeling pretty cool and like level in terms of how you're feeling, you see that news, you can fist pump. It's like, brilliant, I'm delighted for you. But if maybe you've got PMT or like, oh, comparison and PMT, I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah,
I just
worst.
Like disown myself for a couple of days. But if you've got PMT or you've had just a bit, you know, you've had a couple of knockbacks that week, it's been a stretchy week, you might see that news come out and actually it makes you feel like, oh, another person doing best than I can, than I am. So I think there are numerous things at play there.
Yeah. And also you mentioned that that you can fill in the gaps of that person's story. Yeah. Is that where social media becomes quite a dangerous kind of playing ground with comparison? Yeah. Because you're only seeing part of the story.
Yeah, I think that's one of the... I kind of, when I talk about this a lot, I say that we're in almost like an epidemic of comparison because social media and technology are such a power couple. And where we find out most of our information now is on the grapevine. It's on social media. So yes, of course, I think it leads us to kind of like gather up all the breadcrumbs we can and we add them together and we kind of create this... they create a story of how things happen for them, forgetting about when they kind of posted that thing at 2 a.m. saying they're really struggling with their confidence or whatnot. Mm. And we all rushed in to support then.
Yeah.
And then we kind of forget that because, you know, feeds do look so beautiful these days. It's interesting, I was writing about this a couple of days ago in that I have kind of felt quite, what's the word? I felt a little bit conflicted myself in terms of wanting to create a place and a community online, which looks nice if people want to come in and hang out, but not getting caught up in the curation element of it so much.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I've done lots of training and such like to understand like how can I make, you know, Instagram better and how can I bring my very best game, etc. But I do sometimes feel like I'm being like the things I've been taught and I've done too many courses now and I've learned the same thing now several times. So if you see me spending any more money on that, please stop me, love. But it's there's such a lot of focus put on it must look a certain way and consistent, etc.
Yeah.
And so I think we can compare how we're looking as much as what we're reading about too. But I've just kind of made myself a bit of a promise that I would like Instagram just to choose one channel. Social media isn't just that. But when like you spend most time on the gram, you feel like it is.
Yeah. And also it's one of those kind of social, you know, channels that it's visual and there's content behind it. So
exactly.
It feels like people are drawn there and there's more opportunity to communicate with people.
So. Completely. I just want to try and be more scrapbook, less showreel on there.
Okay.
Because I've found that I wasn't posting things. I didn't have a picture to go with them, even though it was a message that was on my heart and I really wanted to share. And equally, I've, you know, hesitated posting things because I'm like, oh, have I said something? Does that look the same as that? And it's like, hold on a second. Like, I'm not, like, I love sharing my voice and I'm doing bits on blogs, but my job is like, my day job's a coach. So I have to be careful. I don't get caught up in like, I need to be like that. I need to be like them.
Yeah.
And actually that's not my core.
I think that's just such a tricky thing. And I think that's something that's so many people struggle with is that kind of we've almost kind of like morphed, a lot of us have morphed into this version of how we think we should be online because that's what we see everybody else doing and that's become the norm.
Yeah,
and I think actually if all of us just went stop, take a step back, let's just post pictures of, I mean, I'm like the worst person for posting kind of like Insta cliche pictures of like an ice cream or some peonies or because they make me happy when I see them on my feed. And but then I just think, why am I doing this? You know,
and that's even cool to ask the question though, because if you say, why am I doing this? You're like, because I love peonies. Post the peonies, you know, like no shade. I think whatever kind of makes you feel like you're participating, but it's again, it's that veil of pressure though, isn't it?
Yeah.
As in like, what part is the should element of this and what part is me? And then if we're not careful, we can really overthink it too. And it's like, you want to be spontaneous as well.
Definitely. The overthinking is definitely a risk. Yeah, so I think that for a lot of parents who are on social media, you know, they're scrolling through Instagram and they see this perfect vision of, you know, family life. And actually, it's really good to take a step back and remember that, like you say, that's a showreel. That's not necessarily, you know, the arguments. Like, there's been times that I've posted a picture on Facebook of us having this, like, family day out, and it has been, like, the biggest nightmare day out with my little girl just refusing to listen to anything we have to say and just been really grumpy all day.
Yeah.
But you look on Facebook and you think, wow, they're totally
look at bliss.
Nailing
yeah,
family
exactly.
life.
It looks, you know, like bliss.
It really doesn't represent. And I think it's really important for us all to remember that, yeah. that what we're looking at isn't reality. But also, how much responsibility do you think we have to, you know, to really think about what we're putting out there and to get that balance and that honesty?
Yeah, I think, well, that's another great question, because it's almost trying to be the change we want to see and making sure that we are being authentic, really. And also not feeling like we have to share everything too, because I don't want to be so cynical to say like vulnerability is cool. But it is absolutely brilliant that we're seeing people, whether they've got 2 followers or they're just in a local mums and babies group and they're talking in like real life to share what's going on. And we need to be there for each other. And the more vulnerable we are, and, you know, the more we can help each other too. And we help other people be vulnerable too and share what's really going on for them. So I think it's interesting with social media, though, because it's so easy for things to look perfect, and we get pulled into, you know, well, I want this to be like the fun part of the day and putting it on social media. But it's not judging ourselves if maybe we're not telling the whole story, because like none of us should have to feel like we're being the social media police.
And we don't have a responsibility to log every single part of our day in a
absolutely.
Public way.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And it's remembering that too. So you can take time, you can take the whole day off social media, or you can take, you know, make sure you're checking it in the mornings at a time that feels right for you as well. Mm. But it's just remembering that we all participate in this. And that's why I think it's easy to be judgmental. But if we had to turn the mirror back on ourselves, you know, I've gotten into double figures trying to get the perfect selfie, you know, and I've kind of like moved my things, like my food's going cold as I'm in a restaurant and I'm moving, and I'm like, Alki, take your phone off the table, and, you know, we're having a romantic date night, I'm like, can you be quiet, can you move it? The shadow of you is in my shot, and all this, you know, so we all participate in it, and there's no malice in it, but it is important just to recognize when it's kind of creeping into maybe dictating things a bit too much there, really.
Yeah.
And also with what's great, like I say, is about Instagram and social media being a great place to just talk authentically about our feelings, but be really careful as well not to make your life the fodder of other people. So it's not about I want to live in a world where we can trust each other enough that we can just say what we think and say what we feel, and people will either like it or they won't.
Yeah.
But that ultimately it's best that you do express it, especially with social media, such great communities. You express it to one you love as well. But if it feels raw for you, I would just want to say, please don't feel like you have to be sharing almost like a diary,
yeah.
unless that feels right for you.
Yes.
Only because, like, your life, your heart is just too important to become the fodder and gossip of other people.
Yeah.
And when we put things out there, they will get talked about.
Yeah.
Even if it's just someone DMing you saying, that really, you know, really touched me today, I hope you're okay. You know, there's often such good feelings, such warmth there as well. But if you haven't healed it, don't put it out there just yet.
Yeah.
Because there's also, you might have heard of this expression, like a vulnerability hangover.
No, I haven't heard
so,
of that.
You might post something and then the day after you regret posting it, or you are worried about what you've put out there, because
yeah.
you, and that's not to, you know, sometimes we'll express an opinion or share something and the people that we know and that care about us, they might not know about it. So it can bring up all sorts of things, like, oh, what will my mum think, or what will my partner think about this because I've just put that in the world, or, oh, you know, this feels like it only happened a little while ago and am I talking about it too soon? So we can almost have a hangover from sharing too much.
Yeah.
And the thing is, once it's out there too. So people talk about having a digital footprint, but it's actually a digital tattoo, because even if you take it down, it might have been screen grabbed, which is fair enough, but all people will have seen it. And it will exist somewhere, even
yeah.
if you take it down. So because we only have certain controls, it's important that we put like checks in place for ourselves such that we don't overstretch ourselves, because, you know, like living in the modern world is not for the faint-hearted. And social media can be a great fun place to hang out and lead to such beautiful connection. But I also can see some people like overstretching themselves a little bit, and then it pings back. And it's not saying you deserve it, but it's like you need to anticipate there's a pendulum swing. We've seen it happen with some of the really big influencers, and you know, they have handled things their own way, and that's all good. The thing I sometimes get a little bit surprised at is that they're surprised, though.
Right.
Around things, too, in terms of if you're putting things out there in a certain way and you've got a certain following, there's going to be a response. It's just like, it isn't a private account, so you don't really get to say. And
that even applies, even if you've got 150 followers on Instagram or Twitter.
It does.
Because ultimately, you know, you are still putting putting your thoughts and your feelings out there to your smaller community.
Absolutely right. And that's the thing. I love that what you've shared there as well, because it is a community. Like, people talk about followers, but every number, apart from the bots, obviously, but every number's a beating heart.
Mm.
You know, so whether you've got, like, 20 and, you know, you're trying to get to 1,000 or you're 80,000 trying to get 100, whatever it is, it's remembering that they're all people. Yeah. Every individual is a person.
Mm.
Then that's, you know, and once you remember that, it stops social media feeling like such a faceless place as well. Yeah,
definitely.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
So you've talked a bit about in the past about comparison triggers. Mm. How do we work out what our comparison triggers are? Yeah. I think for me, in the kind of past sort of few years, so I've got a 7-year-old daughter, and then I've suffered from secondary infertility for quite a few years.
Mm.
And struggle to have any more children. And so for me, definitely a comparison trigger was seeing, you know, kids with their brothers and sisters,
mm-hmm.
and seeing people talking about, you know, beautiful like sibling relationships, mm. and how, you know, honoured they are to watch their kids grow up and develop these bonds and all of that kind of stuff. So I definitely saw that as being a comparison trigger for me in the last few years. But how, you know, would someone listening be able to work out what are the things that make me compare myself to that person in a really negative way?
I think we'll each have our individual ones. And I think, you know, to keep it kind of plain language, it comes down to a feeling.
Mm.
So there'll be perhaps your comparison shows up such that it's pretty, it might affect lots of different things. It might be a general state where you are. Because I've lived in this state before, where I was almost had this like stock exchange up, down, up, down, up, down going on in my head, because I would compare my body and my work and my exam results and my swimming badges when I was a kid, you know, high octane stuff.
Yeah.
Latterly, now that I'm a grown up, in appearance anyway, latterly it tends to be my work and career that comparison comes up for me. And because I know, and I've come to know that because of how my comparison influences my behaviour. So I have in the past, and I dare say I will again, so no judgment. I've almost had some people under surveillance. I'm like, I wonder what they're doing today. And I'm like on their stories, checking in, like their mum on WhatsApp.
I think we all do that. Right? We all have one or two people that we kind of just, check
keep
in
a little
with.
Eye on. And then it kind of would be, I wouldn't even follow them and I'd be looking at them. So I'd actually be seeking them out, taking time out of my day to go and have a look.
Yeah.
Then, you know, other indicators about our comparison triggers are that there'll be certain people that make us feel a bit, and that kind of emotional boil up. Equally, there'll be certain types of content that we might see. So, for example, I really love speaking as part of my job, which is cool. And I would love one day to do a TED Talk. And about, I think it was about a year ago, I saw someone kind of from my industry had done a TED Talk, and she was flying to like America or somewhere like that.
Wow.
And I like kicked off.
I bet you did.
And I actually said, it's not fair. So
little tantrum.
7-year-old Lucy jumped up out of a buggy. or a high chair, whatever. And had a tantrum.
Yeah.
And that, you know, it clear as day said to me, there's comparison there. It's not healed. But more than this, what's going on?
Mm.
And I think that's really the ultimate. If there was kind of one of the keys, I think, to curing comparison is really having awareness. So it's so easy to see the thing, see the trigger, have the comparison come up, and then it boil up with all its emotions and this cocktail. And for me as well, when I'm in comparison, it feels very physical.
Yeah.
So I compare it to, like, you know, the National Geographic programs, they have those hot geysers in Iceland, and they're like really stinky hot water. That's what it feels like for me, like from the bottom of my tummy right up, and then it coats me again as it comes down.
Yeah.
It's a horrible emotion, but it's really easy to stay in that state because it's familiar. And as long as I'm in that state, then they're wrong or they're undeserving and I'm right, or I'm undeserving too. I can stay in that state because it's comfortable. My inner critic's in charge. But then if I can then quickly follow that with, though, what's going on or what is this trying to tell me or teach me, that immediately puts comparison at arm's length again, because you can't be in comparison and then, like, have the self-inquiry to explore it at the same time. Like, one has to override the other.
Yeah.
So even being out of state, if I notice what I'm feeling here and observing it, gets you out of that, like, hot water.
Yeah.
And then we're able to kind of see it and work through that too. Because it's easy to know when we're in comparison, but what I would say is, we might describe the feelings differently, and we will all be triggered by things differently as well. So, and that, like, as we kind of shared before in our conversation, that is often influenced by the state we feel like we're in as well.
Yeah.
So if I'm having a good day, if I was having a good day and I saw that person get a TED talk, oh, brilliant, another person I know has got a TED talk, that means that mine must be on the way.
Yeah, or you might think, right, I'm going to hit them up for, like, tips on how they managed
exactly
to make that happen.
I'm going to flood those comments with emojis and congratulations. I'm all over it. I'm going to throw a GIF in there. But I wasn't in a good state. So it was like, oh, that's not fair. And I just had to basically take a bit of time to calm down around it, but move through it. And this is one of the things I kind of teach clients too, in that, so I'll be aging myself here, but I remember the original Crystal Maze, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's, like, iconic.
It was
quiz show,
good.
I think it's fair to say iconic. I look at a comparison a bit like that. Comparison is trying to give us a crystal of insight. It's trying to give us a zap of knowledge or a really clear signal about something that's going on or not going on in our own lives. So our invitation is to kind of feel the feelings, get in there, get the insight, and then get out again.
That's a really interesting way of looking at
it. Yeah. Because, so maybe, perhaps if I share this in context. So an example that I use a lot, because I think it's easy for a lot of people to get, is that, so I had a client that came to me a couple of years ago, and she was, you know, we had a call just, you know, to suss out, you know, if I could help and support. And what was immediately clear is that she'd had a couple of people into surveillance, and that her trigger was around travel and adventure, I suppose, to kind of use a plain term.
Mm.
So she worked in the events industry, and she was really triggered when she saw people like checking in at departure lounges and, you know, doing those, like, hot dog legs, you know, in between meetings, lol, you know, and just having a great time. Traveling with their work or for pleasure as well, you know, oh, here's the spice market of, you know, Rajasthan, etc. And there she was, sat at her desk, kind of looking out at, you know, just a grey cityscape. Now, her crystal of insight, which we were able to unpick, is that when we kind of explored where she was at around this area, she actually hadn't had a holiday, let alone a big, you know, juicy adventure, for like a couple of years. You know, she could track back to taking a long weekend to go to, you know, a family wedding in France and that kind of thing. And she had, like, you know, Condé Nast Traveler's magazine stacking up next to her bedside table. But had she actually taken any steps at all to, you know, start saving for that long haul fly, or to, you know, get in touch with a travel advisor to help her plot the journey? No, she hadn't done anything with that at all. And on top of that, she was exhausted. She worked in the events industry. It's very deadline driven, and she didn't like to delegate. So she was taking on all of the pressure and all of the responsibility for so many projects. So it's with that insight, and with it being clear that actually adventure and, like, enjoying and immersing herself in culture was not, and it was non-negotiable actually. And what she did, she starved that part of herself for years and years. So her so what bit from getting that insight was to, you know, I think it was like the Monday after the Thursday I'd seen her, she was in her boss's office, like before he'd even taken his coat off, she was sat there ready to talk to him.
Wow.
And she said, you know, I've been doing some reflection, I really need some time out and time away for these reasons. And he said to her, I've been waiting for us to have this conversation for the last year.
Oh my goodness.
He's like, there's only so many hints I can drop to you. You know, really. And things like, you know, there'd be big status meetings and he'd ask things like, when's everyone taking holidays? Or, you know, is there anything we need to be aware of, bearing in mind this project? And people say, oh, well, I'm away this day or I'm, you know, on this project. And he'd look at her and say, have you got any holidays booked? To her, like no one else. He'd always ask her. And she'd always say, oh, no, no, I can cover, or no, no, it's sorted. And, you know, without him kind of saying, get out of the office, for lots of different reasons, there was no other way. People just couldn't get it through to her.
Yeah.
But she got there herself, which was great. And then she did end up, and she does now do a couple of, like, long hauls a year. So she did, like, a fly and flop to Dubai or something like that, or just a really easy sunshine, rejuvenation holiday. And then she'll go, like, almost pick somewhere on a map and then chart how she can make a trek or a trip out of it. And that's her non-negotiable now. So no matter how busy life gets, no matter how stressed out she's at work, she always knows that's coming.
Yeah.
And now she'll see people checking in on Facebook or whatever. She's like, well, I'll be there soon, you know?
So what do you do if you work out what your trigger is and it's not something that's... So say, for example, if she wasn't in a financial position to start booking trips or say, you know, thinking about my example, if my trigger was happy families with lots of siblings... Yeah. And the reality for me was that this is it. I can't have any more children.
Yeah.
Is that about self-preservation? Is it about protecting yourself and not, you know, kind of exposing yourself to that kind of comparison trap?
I think that's a really important part of it, actually. Because I would never necessarily advocate putting ourselves in these, like, echo chambers. But I do think it's really important if we are feeling vulnerable in a state, or we are going through something, whether it's health, family, or it could be anything. If it feels important for us and if it feels real, then it's real.
Mm.
So then I do think it's really important to make sure we are exercising exquisite and explicit self-care as well. And that does start with looking at what we're following. And also, you know, and so making sure we're hiding or just putting things on rest for a bit that we do find is triggering for us. Just while our confidence and our strength comes back, just while we maybe see through the steps we need to walk to get the answers that we want to get ultimately for ourselves as well. I do think preservation is really important there too. And also making sure that we're not just getting online support as well, because what's great is people coming together in, whether it's DMs or on WhatsApp or Messenger, whatever it is, or in the comments section even. It's brilliant to have that, you know, vibrant discussion. You get a lot of support there too. Making sure when we are in those times that we're really tending our real life connections that feel good. And so that can be about preservation as well. So if you are, you know, going through something like, so for example, with your example there that you've shared there too, it might be actually you need to just spend time with your partner and just like nourish each other until you work out like what are going to be the steps through. They don't have to have all the answers, but just the next steps, just feeling a little bit better. It doesn't even have to be the steps to getting the answer that we so want, although of course there's going to be the appetite for that as well. But that might also mean making sure that you are taking yourself out and doing the things that you enjoy with the people that you love as well. So if, for example, you've got a couple of mates that maybe are a little bit nosy and we're all naturally inquisitive, but if you're not ready to sit and unpack this stuff every time you go for lunch, it might be just pressing pause on that. And it's just like, just, you know, not going off the radar, but just putting a little bit of distance between you and that personality as well, while you do preserve and while you do restore as well. Just come back up to yourself too and give yourself the time and permission to go through whatever you need to go through as well, unapologetically. Because I think that's when we're in pain, or we see someone else in pain too, we almost want to push them through it.
Mm.
When actually the kindest thing we can do to ourselves is just like let ourselves feel it, because we're not wrong.
Have that space.
If I made a mistake, that's exactly it. That's exactly it. And stay checked in with that too. And it might be, you know what, I'm not going to see that person for a year. Or do you know what, I'm going to take the app off my phone, the end. Not just like, you know, put it on quiet and not check it as much. You make the right choices for you. Because whatever they are, people will understand down the line, ultimately. Yeah. And I think that's, you know, we joked about this when we were just getting settled, didn't we? In terms of, we've got to give ourselves and each other more credit. You know, I want to live in a world where I believe people are doing their best.
Yeah.
and they don't always get it right, and there will be missteps. Well, welcome to human race. I won't always get it right, and I'll make missteps as well.
That's so important.
And yeah, and there'll be no malice in it, but I could really mess things up for myself and others. I could hurt someone's feelings as well. And there's never any malice in it, but unfortunately, we don't always get it right. When we are going through our experience, whether it's good or bad, whether it's caused by comparison or not, you've just got to do what's right for you. Like, that is the only brief. And that's down to, like, what you eat, what time you get up in the morning, whether you choose to check the apps or not. It's being forensic almost about that, because what that does is it nourishes us and it can bring us back to life. And then we can be in a state where if we need to make a decision, we can make it.
Yeah, I love that. And then what if, say, for example, you're kind of recurring comparison issue is with a friend. So say, for example, if you're renting and, you know, you've got a friend who buys an amazing massive property and they're spending loads of money doing up and buying beautiful, you know, furnishings, and it just makes you look at your own life and feel like, why haven't I got that? Because that's like an ongoing thing. And if that's a friend that you want to carry on being friends with, how do you take a step back and deal with those issues and preserve your friendship?
Yeah, so I think I get this one, and I think this resonates a lot with lots of people. So this is such a perfect question. This, for me, comes down to thinking about time zones and that your friend is in a different time zone to you. So I saw this great video about this. I must find the reference for it. We have a great video in that New York gets up, say, 6 hours before LA, but no one accuses LA of being, like, behind, you know, or, like, a bit lazy, or, like, you know, just going with it. And no one sees New York as, like, being the leader.
Yeah, being ahead.
Yeah, they're two very dynamic, very different places that are in their own time zones. And when we see people hit milestones before we've got there ourselves, it can create this false sense of them being ahead. Excuse me. But actually, they're just doing what's right for them in their time zone. And our time will come to do what's right for us in our time zone. And if that acts as a stimulus for you to get your act together and look at where your finances are at, I mean, you might have had your head buried in the sand since your early 20s or earlier before that, which, by the way, is totally fine. Like, a lot of us have very complicated relationships with money, but that's a whole other episode for us to talk about. But if it is triggering a comparison of, I want that too, then I think the best thing to do there is, like, what's the next best step you can take? Well, it might be you have a look at where your debt's at and where your income's at, because often we're in a much better state than we think we are too. And yet also, what's really important is we think about, like, what it might have took for our friends to get there. So they might have, someone very dear to them might have died for them to be able to have the money for the deposit, and they'd give anything to have that person back on earth, you know. Equally, they might have been working their ass off non-stop for years, and actually, when you think about it, they don't go out much, they don't go on holiday, so they've had their focus on maybe saving and accumulating. Now, like, what's that doesn't have to say is, right, no more Pizza Express for anybody, and, like, you know, cancelled Marbella, wherever you want to go on your holidays. But what I think it does say to us is that if we see someone achieving what they want to, what's our version of that, and what's our path to it as well? Because there's this great expression, you see it all over Pinterest, it's a little bit cliche to be honest, but I'll say it anyway, but a year from now you'll wish you started today. And the same things, like, my friend Gail always has this great expression, which is, future self says thank you.
The whole future self thing, I think, just resonates so much with me, because it's so easy just to think about present self.
Yeah.
And a lot of us reflect on what we were like in the past as well. We might beat ourselves up about things that we've done or not done. But thinking about your future self, I think really, really helps, doesn't
it? And it doesn't even have to be like, oh, it'll take us 20 years to get there. It's like, well, it might, but you don't know. It could take you 7. I know, like, what I was doing 7 years ago. And 7 years ago, me would have been so chuffed to know that I was doing this now. So it's using that as a stimulus to kind of, obviously, get behind the person if you can. But if it is triggering, what is that there to tell you?
Yeah.
What, you know, so that it doesn't get in the way of the relationship as well. Because that, you know, that can be very triggering itself too. But I think it's like making sure that, like, we are all so resourceful. You know, if someone emailed you about, can you help me in a certain way? Like, I don't know, but I will figure it out and come back to you. We're so resourceful. I mean, you dig so deep. And I think sometimes we forget we're sitting on that for ourselves.
Yeah.
There's a beautiful expression, which is, the oak tree lives within the acorn. And I think, you know, you might be renting now, but where is your, okay, what's your version of your Downton Abbey? Because yeah. it's in you somewhere right now. And what are the steps to get there?
And also, is there anything to be said for maybe accepting the fact that, using that same example, okay, so I'm renting and my friend just bought this palatial, you know, house and doing it up. Actually, that isn't ever going to happen for me. Therefore, I'm going to just make peace with the fact that I'll probably be renting forever and that's okay. Is there anything, you know?
Certainly, yeah. It works for the Parisians, doesn't it? You know, they all think we're absolutely bananas, like, you know, getting on the property ladder.
It's a very British thing, isn't
it? It's so British.
The obsession with buying property.
Completely. So, yeah, I would almost like, there's almost like a step back from that, which is great you've touched on here. It's like almost question, like, who does that belief belong to?
Yeah.
Is it because your mum and dad put so much pressure on all of your siblings and you're the only one that hasn't got on the career ladder? I mean, excuse me, on the property ladder in that way. But, you know, who does that belief belong to? And actually, you might be renting, but you live in like an absolutely beautiful place with amazing transport links and you can get to an airport in so much time. And, you know, there's pros and cons to do with everything, I think. Because sometimes we do inherit dreams or we have our own and then they go past their sell-by date.
Yeah.
Because I had a client actually who had some anxiety about not being on the property ladder. So she'd saved and saved and got this chunk of deposit together. But she didn't want to buy a house. She wanted to go travelling, you know, or she wanted to actually invest in a startup that her brother was trying to get off the ground. So she was sitting there with like 30 grand and she kept seeing all these properties, which were perfect for her, but it wasn't aligned with her, which is why she couldn't connect with them.
Yeah.
And in the end, she did shove half of it a brother's way, and they're doing really well. It's going to be amazing when it launches properly. But it was important for me to kind of say, hold on, who does that belong to you though? Because if it doesn't, put it down and go and stay at your mates, have a great time.
That's brilliant. And I think a lot of, for mums and dads, especially when they're kind of in those early stages of parenthood, I reckon a lot of the comparison probably happens, if we're talking about social media, it probably happens at 3 a.m. when they're up, you know, doing a night feed and they're knackered and sleep deprived. Yeah. Is there any kind of anything that they can do to, when they're in that kind of almost slightly crazed state of mind, which you do get when you're properly sleep deprived, you do have that properly, you feel a bit bonkers.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you can tell yourself at that point to pull yourself back from the comparison trap?
Well, when you're in that state, this really comes down to self-care. Like, how do you just feel okay? I mean, I really feel like, so I still get anxiety here and there. But I used to have it regularly and it was quite acute. So I am all for neutrality. So I will answer the question, but I just want to share this. I think that we have to, like, we have to be in a good state. We've got to be positive, we've got to be present, we've got to be really with it. Well, actually, just feeling okay, when you haven't felt okay, feels like winning the bloody jackpot, doesn't it?
It does.
So what I would say, and I just want to kind of really state that, because especially parents who have so much pressure on, like, not only just like to keep this like beautiful being or beings alive and then keep the roof over the head, etc., not to mention, like, you know, being the perfect vegan chef as well, like, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I would say looking at what is going to make you feel okay. So that might be that you actually leave the phone in another room and you go downstairs with the baby and you put something fun on Netflix, or you get an audiobook which just puts something else in your ears and just takes the stimulus away from your eyes. So that, I mean, you know, if they're being a bit grisly, of course, I'm not being like, oh, be really present with your child. You're tired. I get it. I am not here. Like, that's not candy coat it, right? But what can you do in the moment which will just make you feel 5% better? And that will sometimes be, well, I'm going to like turn this horrible strip light off that I've got in the kitchen. Why did we even get that anyway? You know, and it might be that, you know, you light a candle while you know, just to do something for you to bring a little bit of softness into that moment. Because I've got a 19-year-old stepson, but I never had to do night feeds, obviously, with him, because we came into each other's lives when he was 9. But yeah, that is a state where you just need to feel like you're getting just past survival.
Yeah.
So it's like those tiny little wins, those tiny steps will make all the difference. So even if it's things like, you know, you treat yourself to a really lovely dressing gown. So even if you are kind of, you know, naked and bedraggled, getting out of bed, and you hear that little voice going, at least you're putting on a really lovely dressing gown, and you go and pick, if it's your turn, you pick up the baby and you do what you've got to do.
Yeah.
But, you know, make sure that the chair you've got is as comfortable as it possibly can be. You know, that old IKEA thing that you said you threw out 5 years ago and haven't got around to it, it's not going to cut the mustard. So I say anything you can do to make all of it 1% better, I would say gets the focus.
Brilliant. I'm taking notes, Lucy.
Yeah, yeah.
This is going to be me in a few months' time.
Yes, yes.
At 3 a.m. I'm going to be there with my dressing gown and my posh chair.
Yeah, and your Jo Malone candle.
I love it. Right, I've got some quick fire questions for
lovely.
You.
Oh,
okay, when was the last time that you compared yourself to someone else? Be honest.
Last week.
Oh, really?
Yeah, what was it? Oh, I actually compare myself most times in the day. I compare myself most days, but what I would say is my recovery time's different now.
Right.
So I'm like, ooh, rather than, you know? Sorry to only express it through those words, but like the emotion is different on the scale.
I get it, yeah.
Yeah, I started working with a personal trainer, and I made the mistake of looking at, I think it was like Transformation Tuesday or Throwback Thursday or something, because I think it was only last week. And I was like, oh my goodness, they've been working out for a much shorter amount of time than I have, and they're older than me, and they just look so well,
yeah.
You know, and they're lifting more, and oh, she's got much nicer leggings. And I was like, what is going on? This is like Debbie in Alabama or something, like Tucson, Arizona, or somewhere like really random.
Good old Debbie with her leggings.
Oh, Debbie in her leggings, don't get me started. But yeah, last week.
Brilliant. What's your worst habit?
Oh my goodness. Procrastination, I think. I find it quite easy to get overwhelmed, and I'm like, I'm going for a nap. Mm. So I think that, and I would, if I could have a second worst habit, the inner critic, and like this old story I have that I'm a flake.
Okay.
I have this really persistent story that I probably will have for a long time. It's something I've been coached on, and I've had therapy on, etc., because it's really limiting. But yeah, bad habit of just like being really mean to myself about it. You know, if I ever make a misstep or a mistake, I will always come back to that.
Right.
And it's really persistent.
Yeah.
So I'm going to call that, I'm calling it out as a bad habit.
It really sounds like it is.
Yeah, and I am messy. Oh my God.
Are
Alison,
you?
I'm so messy.
I'm looking around your flat and it really doesn't look that messy.
So delighted. Thank you so much. Please tell me. Mummy, you're listening. But thank you very much. But I am an absolute nightmare. I really am a nightmare. I've just tried to accept it about myself. You know what? I'm messy.
Yeah.
I'm also a good mate. I'm a great cook.
This is it.
I throw a great kitchen party.
Yeah.
But I'm messy.
There are people out there who are really, really tidy and clean, and they are terrible in the kitchen.
Yeah, exactly.
It's about balancing.
It's just my
it.
Thing.
Exactly. It's all good. So I usually ask people what their most embarrassing parenting moment is, but I want to know from you just in general,
yeah,
your number one most embarrassing moment.
Oh my God,
something
how
you've
many.
Done or that's happened to you that's
this is kind of funny, and it always comes up around when I do think of embarrassing moments. I remember when I was about 19 or so, and I'd started a work placement, and for a few reasons, like a couple of bosses had left, and I'd find myself in these meetings I had no business being in because I was 19 years old and I didn't know my ass from my elbow. And I remember we were reading through this document, and I went, "What's hyperbole?" And they were like, "Lucy, it's hyperbole." And I was like, "Oh, sorry." And I just remember that moment. I was like, "Why didn't I just be quiet and go and look it up afterwards?"
Do you know what? I have been there, because there, are, especially when you are, you know, in the workplace and you're maybe new, there are definitely times when you see a word written down and you've never seen it written down before. So I would be that person.
I just wanted the floor to kind of swallow me up, basically. But there are so many. Like, I'm always getting people's names wrong because I say them really confidently. They're always too polite to say anything else.
No.
So I've got my friend Helen that I called Hannah the whole first day we met. And so she DM'd me later. She went, "Because I think we're going to stay pals, I've really enjoyed meeting you. I need you to know that my name is actually Helen."
That's
like,
really good that she said
that. Yeah, I was going to say, because we nearly went to the point of no return. But yeah, I do that quite a lot, and I'm always like for that, especially if I've got PMT. You know, you get, your brain goes a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And like, I push a door instead of pulling it, I'm like, I can't even open a door.
Oh.
And I'm like losing it, like in, you know, Pret a Manger or something. Like, you all right, love? So yeah, so many. It's just part of life.
It really
it?
is. Yeah,
gotta laugh at yourself.
I think it's really important to laugh at yourself, and I think it's really important to be able to tell these stories and not want the ground to swallow you up now about it.
Yeah, so, absolutely. Oh, thanks.
Listen, Lucy, thank you so much for being my guest today. It has been a huge pleasure to talk to you.
I've loved it. Thank you so much for having me. I've really enjoyed the conversation.
Thanks. Big thanks to Lucy for being my guest today, and a huge thank you to you for listening as always. I really hope that you got something out of that episode. I know that I did, and I'm going to try really hard not to compare myself quite as much. Hop over to iTunes and rate, review and subscribe to the podcast, and I'll catch up with you next time.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.